Modern Love, the podcast, is supported by...
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
Produced by the iLab at WBUR, Boston.
From the New York Times and WBUR Boston, this is Modern Love. Stories of love, loss, and redemption. I'm your host, Meghna Chakrabarty. Have you ever dated someone significantly older or younger than you? Robin Grierson did, and realized that age really can matter. She writes about it in her essay, The Accidental Older Woman. It's read by Rosie Perez. She stars in the new NBC show, Rise.
To celebrate my 40th birthday, I signed up for a motorcycle rider course. I had to bring gloves and boots, and while I suppose I could have borrowed these, I wanted to go shopping instead. When I walked into the gear store, I realized how far out of my element I was. I had no idea how to buy motorcycle boots, what features I needed, how they should fit. The salesman, Jesse, was explaining how various safety features of specialized clothing could keep me from dying. And I was thinking, yeah, okay, but do these go over or under my pant legs? When we turned our attention to helmets, Jesse said, to fit a helmet properly, you start by measuring the rider's head. Was he making fun of me? You mean it's not just small, medium, or large? Jesse was about 5'7", with thick brown hair that just fell below his shoulders. I have a big head, I joked, so I probably need a large. He reached both hands around my head with a measuring tape. His face gave no expression, though his blue eyes met mine directly, and I watched him as they traveled up to the center of my forehead. Later that day, I gave my girlfriend the play-by-play in a fit of giggles. I swear he was flirting with me, and he was like 24. If my class is filled with guys like him, then happy birthday to me! It wasn't. There were about a dozen teenagers and a couple of guys my age, wearing long sleeves, long pants, gloves, and helmets in the late August heat. We melted into one student mass. I passed the course despite my atrocious figure eights. The week before, I'd been visiting my grandmother, who confided over lunch that I'd become her worst fear. A single 40-year-old woman with no prospects for marriage. Now, at least, I was just a short written test away from being a single 40-year-old motorcyclist with no prospects for marriage. The next weekend, I was cleaning my house. I picked up the bag from the gear store. When I reached in to fish out the receipt, I pulled out Jesse's card with it. Smart salesman, I thought. Until turning it over, I read that he printed on the back, "Call me," with his personal number. I texted him. He called immediately and asked me for a date. Not just a date. He offered to cook for me. Impressed by his confidence and directness, I said yes. We set a date for Thursday. An hour later, he texted to say he wanted to see me earlier. He would still cook on Thursday, but he wanted to see me on Tuesday or Monday, basically as soon as possible. And by the way, what were my feelings about sex? I'm only looking for a relationship, I said. I get really attached. His response? When the sex is good, I tend to get attached. Fearing my follow-up question might kill the date, I asked anyway. How old are you? 20. But I'll be 21 next month. You? Huh. After telling him I was 39, I canceled. In this impossible farce, in which our age difference was exactly the point, I still couldn't bring myself to say I was 40. Age is just a number, he argued, the mantra of the younger man. Later, as I was walking through Trader Joe's trying to collect my groceries and thoughts, my phone pinged with text after text. His protests went something like this. I think you're beautiful. I deserve a chance. We only live once. Why be afraid? Afraid? I laughed a little. Still, I said no. And I kept saying no for months and months. Then my grandmother passed away suddenly. She had been given a diagnosis of cancer and was gone within 8 days. The last 5 of which I spent with her around the clock. She and I were each other's only close family. And afterwards, I needed to escape. All I wanted was for someone to take me for a motorcycle ride. So I texted Jesse and asked, can we go for a ride? 2 days later, after Jesse suggested a date instead, I found myself seated at an outdoor patio drinking a margarita. He was running late, he said. I was nervous, felt foolish. What if I didn't recognize him? And then, there he was, standing in front of me, and I wondered how I ever said no, even once. He folded his arms across his chest and said, go ahead. Ask me anything. What's the body language all about? I said, laughing. Your body is not saying, ask me anything. In one motion, he picked up his chair, brought it next to mine, faced me, held both my hands, looked me in the eye, and said, is this better? The stories he told about himself were clearly designed to make him look promiscuous and experienced. I ended up giving him the same impression, unfortunately. When he asked how many people I slept with, I said, do you mean guys? I believe he thought the date was going extremely well. After paying our check, Jesse walked me to my car. We were in a large, mostly empty parking lot around 11 p.m., standing under a horribly efficient streetlight. There was an SUV parked a few spaces away, and someone inside was listening to music. I said, I like this song. We were facing each other, holding hands. We started to sway. He put his hands on my hips. I put my arms around his waist. And just like that, we were dancing under the glare of a streetlight to music coming out of someone else's SUV. And I was still 40, and he was still 21 and a half when he kissed me. So I kissed him back. Or it may have been the other way around. We saw each other a couple more times that week and made plans to go out for a drink Friday night. Saying yes to one date and then another was easy. I didn't look too far down the road or think about it too much. But the age thing followed us like a shadow. On Friday evening, he called to say he was running a few minutes late. Again. What he actually said was, I'm waiting for my dad to get home and then I could leave, explaining that he needed to tell his dad that he had to pick up his sister at the mall. Probably just another 10 minutes. He'd been cagey about where he lived, saying he was alternately crashing with friends, staying at home sometimes, and spending a few weekends watching his ex-girlfriend's cat when she was out of town. I suspected he lived at home full-time, but didn't want to own up to it. I ordered a glass of wine at the bar, wishing it was a double shot of tequila. He arrived, I waved him over and he jumped over the furniture to take his seat. He framed my body with his, holding my hands, our knees touching. "So, who in here is your type?" I asked. Jesse laughed. "Besides you?" Then he surveyed the room, describing a girl's location, and said, "Not her," and listed his reasons why. She was seated to my left. I turned to peek, and as I did, he discreetly pulled my hands nearly into his lap. As I turned back toward him, I caught two other girls staring at me. Jesse and I kept flirting and playing games, but these two women, who looked to be in their mid-20s, were glaring at me fiercely. I never would have imagined that only 2 weeks after my grandmother passed away, I would be laughing so freely. And now, with their beady eyes, these women were lecturing me for daring to try. Jesse leaned in and whispered, "Do you want me to ask them what their problem is?" I whispered back, "They just want you for themselves." "There's a reason they're single," he said a bit loud. I loved him for that, and I loved spending time with him. Even so, I sensed that our time together was special precisely because it was destined to be fleeting. "I prefer older women," he had said to me more than once, and that, I realized, was part of the problem. Because the more he talked about liking older women, the more I became one, not only in his eyes, but in mine too, which left me feeling cast in a role I didn't want to play. When I'm with my friends, there's much more of a younger woman in me than I think Jesse could appreciate. Yes, age is just a number, but it's also a perspective, one that, at 21, means knowing what you want and going for it. No matter how many times you're told no. And one that, at 40, well, 41, means understanding that desire is often less about straight lines than figure eights. The kind, in this case, I had no hope of mastering.
That's Rosie Perez reading Robin Grierson's essay, The Accidental Older Woman. Here's Rosie.
I went through a period where I only dated younger men. And when I say younger, I mean like younger, like, you know, robbing the cradle. I didn't just rob the cradle, I made it swing. And it wasn't until I hit my 40s that I realized that it doesn't matter how old someone is when it comes to love, but it does matter when it comes to understanding who you are as a person. And I understood that I needed someone who was much more mature than the wonderful gentleman that I, younger gentleman that I was dating, and that I was not going to chastise someone because they didn't grow up yet. I thought that was really unfair of me. And once I claimed that, I met my husband.
We'll catch up with Robin after the break.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with the first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
When Robin Grierson wrote this piece 8 years ago, she wanted to correct the record around the idea of the cougar.
And this sort of archetype of an older woman as a sort of aggressor. And that felt really stale to me and not really realistic. A lot of my girlfriends and I were not really having that experience. It was sort of the opposite. We were getting a lot of people asking us out on dates that were much younger than we were. And I just wanted to add my perspective to that conversation.
Shortly after Robin and Jesse broke up, she moved across the country, and they haven't stayed in touch. But she says she doesn't regret the relationship.
When he first asked me out, I was like, no, absolutely not. I'm never going out with you. That's crazy. That gap was too large for me. And the gap was real. And the more that sort of showed up in terms of things we had in common or didn't, or the ways that we looked at life, he was sort of looking at the beginning of what he would make out of a career. And I was, you know, I owned a business and I had owned it for a few years. And that was sort of my third career. So there's just much different perspectives on life. And the more that I saw the gap show up, the more I felt older.
Now, Robin's living in Las Vegas and working on a book. She says that she's challenging herself through her writing, and she's not really trying to date.
I've always been more comfortable alone. You know, I think that might have something to do with being a writer and a reader and just wanting to protect having enough time for yourself. So I love dating and I love people, for sure. But I am really comfortable being single.
And for people listening to her piece,
I hope they laugh. I hope they laugh at this story because dating is hard, no matter who's doing it. You know, if you're trying to go on a date and get to know someone new, it's not easy. And I hope that they will take the first step towards something that they've been thinking about and give themselves permission in some way. We tend to judge whether something is worth doing before we do it. And we never know what we miss that way. So trust that part of yourself that wants to try things.
After the break, Daniel Jones, editor of the Modern Love column for the New York Times.
In celebration of the Trinity Collection's 100th anniversary, this podcast is supported by Cartier.
My name is Thomas Gibbsneff. I'm a journalist at the New York Times. I served in the Marine Corps as an infantryman. When it comes to reporting on the front line, a lot of the same basics are at play. You're looking at the map of where you're going. If you're on a paved road, field roads, you know, is there a hospital nearby? Is your body armor affixed with the first aid kit? Does everyone know where that first aid kit is? We arrive into a military position. I get out of the car. I look at my watch. You know, I set a timer, no more than an hour. I'm listening for drones, jets, check in with the team. Is everyone comfortable? And if they are, then we proceed. Frontline reporting is dangerous, but I think nothing is more important than talking to the people involved, you know, hearing their stories and being able to connect that with people thousands of miles away. Anything that can make something like this more personal, I think, is well worth the risk. New York Times subscribers make it possible for us to keep doing this vital coverage. If you'd like to subscribe, you can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here's Dan Jones.
I get a fair number of essays about the older woman and the younger man, and it reverses the paradigm that has been sort of set in stone for so long that men in their 40s are free to date women in their 20s. And turns that on its head, and it's just, you know, you see these relationships more and more and more, and you see them working. In this case, it didn't, but you see them working more often than you did in the past, and the stigma sort of falling away, and more power to them.
If you love the podcast, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We love to hear from you, and it helps people find the show. Modern Love is a production of The New York Times and WBUR, Boston's NPR station. We're produced, directed, and edited by Jessica Alpert, John Perotti, Amory Sievertson, and Caitlin O'Keefe. Sound design by Matt Reed. The idea for the Modern Love podcast was conceived by Lisa Tobin. Iris Adler is our executive producer. Daniel Jones is the editor of Modern Love for The New York Times and advisor to the show. Music for the podcast, courtesy of APM. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. See you next week.